Perhaps you have played this game. I know how somebody else should have spent his or her money. Maybe you visited a friend's home and they've redone the kitchen. But you think, if I'd spent all this money, I would have put the refrigerator there and the dishwasher here. Or someone saves up and goes on a big vacation to Bali. And you think, I wouldn't have gone to the South Pacific or to Indonesia. I would have gone to Europe. You go out to restaurants. I wouldn't have spent my money on this meal. I would have ordered that entree. My suspicion is most of us at one time or another have indulged in this pastime. But why talk about chump change? Why don't we talk about real money? Billions of dollars. Steve Jobs, the CEO of Apple, died recently. And there was a lot of commentary about the contributions Mr. Jobs made to technology and commerce and marketing and the cultural life of our country through his inventions and through his company, Apple. There was also some comments, both before and after his death, about his philanthropy or his apparent lack thereof. And he's been asked about this. Folks wanted to know why he didn't give more money away. Why didn't he invest it in a foundation? And his response, which appeared to be sincere, was that he felt the best thing he could do was take the money he earned from his company and reinvest it in Apple so they could continue to make products that would change people's lives. That's one approach to philanthropy. Another one that's been commented on in the press is that propounded by Warren Buffett, the sage of Omaha, the great investor, who has said that along with his bosom pal, Bill Gates, he is going to leave at least half of his billions to charity when he dies. Indeed, he's already identified the Gates Foundation as the beneficiary of his largesse, feeling that this organization is doing good work that he believes in. Now, one of the criticisms that has been leveled at Mr. Buffett is that he's not giving his money away now. Why hold on to it until he dies? If he cares so much about helping worthy causes, surely he could let go of a few billion dollars right now. He could get rid of all of it and see his money at work. I don't know what goes through Warren Buffett's head. If I did, I would probably be a billionaire investor. But I'm going to guess that Mr. Buffett, knowing the way our world works, knows that if he did indeed give away all of his money today, he would receive a lot of favorable press for about 15 minutes, and then, being broke, nobody would ever listen to him again. Money talks. That's the way the world seems to work. That's why we spend so much time thinking about it. That's why it can be fun to talk about what other people should do with their money. Of course, if we start talking about what we should do with our own money, we might have a little bit less fun, and for a variety of reasons. We might be dealing with budgetary pressures at home. We might have competing obligations, and it's hard for us to determine which ones should receive priority. We may not want to confront what our use of our money says about our priorities. We don't talk about money in church. Now, I suspect there are a couple of people who are saying, wait a minute. We talk about money in church all the time. Indeed, we've got a Sunday devoted to money. Each week during the service, we have an offering and a reflection on what money can do. We have committees that do nothing but talk about money. Trustees, finance. Do you know we have not one, not two, but three treasurers in this church? We talk about money all the time. Well, yes, but also no. We talk about the functional aspects of money, how it's being spent in relation to our budget. We talk about our mission and ministry. But we in the church, and not just this church, get skittish when it comes to exploring questions around money and what it means in our lives and how we treat it and how we let it shape us. And I say this having worked with scores and scores of congregations in both the United Church of Christ and the Episcopal Church. I've mentioned this before. My suspicion is most people in our churches would be very, very uncomfortable with their fellow members knowing what they give financially to support the mission and ministry of the church. And yet, it doesn't bother them that people know whether or not they are coming to worship on Sunday. It doesn't seem to be an issue that people know that they're not volunteering time or they are giving time. Why? What's going on here? Why are we letting money be the yardstick that we use to judge ourselves and one another? And this isn't just an issue in the church. We know this is something that affects our entire society. Forbes magazine doesn't have a list of the 400 nicest people. Instead, it's the 400 richest people. And we used to have shows like Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. News programs, TV shows, magazines, the internet are obsessed with money and wealth and how people get it and how they spend it. What is going on here? This anxiety around money isn't new. It's been with people for a very long time. Jesus recognized that. And he called the attention of his disciples to this reality. This morning's reading comes immediately after the parable of the rich fool. You remember, he's the guy who builds the big new barns to replace the old ones, and he is feeling great. Those barns look good. They're strong. They're beautiful. He's going to put all of his stuff in them. And then he is going to go have a nice meal and feel good about what he's done. There's only one problem with this plan. God shows up and says, "Sorry, your ticket's being punched tonight. It's over." We try to create security. We try to find happiness. We look for contentment through money and through the things money can buy. And yet all too often in our lives, we come up short. We miss the things we're looking for, the experiences we truly want, the relationships we want to nurture. Jesus spoke about this issue at this time in the story that Luke shares with us because he is coming close to Jerusalem and he knows what's going to happen there. Time is running out. The day of judgment is coming. When we mention the day of judgment in church, all too often people get worried. There's an assumption that judgment is bad, that God wants to punish us and slap us down. But that's not the case. We see clues to why that's not the case right here in today's lesson. God has already given us the kingdom. The time of judgment is to be a time of blessing. The kingdom isn't some faraway place, some other dimension in the future. It's here. It's now. God's new creation is breaking into our world. But there's a catch. There's always a catch, isn't there? We have to be ready to accept this gift. We have to set aside the distractions and the preoccupations that keep us from focusing on the things that will give us true happiness and renewed life. Sure, we should save for retirement, plan for our kids' education, pay our bills, go out and enjoy ourselves. But we should not let money and the pursuit of it become the thing that defines us as individuals or community or society. Because when we do, we lose the chance to enjoy the blessings that God wants us to enjoy. I want to tell you a little story. It's not perfectly analogous to what's going on here, but I hope it will give you a feel. A sense of what we're talking about, of the kingdom being offered, but being missed. Like many of you, I'm a Red Sox fan. And there are a few things that bring me more pleasure than taking in a game at Fenway Park. I have some wonderful memories of games there. My first date with Rachel was watching Pedro Martinez's pitching debut. The Sox won. Many of you were here a couple of weeks ago when Jim Crawford, our guest preacher, visited with us. Jim and I used to go to a lot of games at Fenway. We would stand in Section 25. We saw the Sox win some. We saw the Sox lose some. Jim always knew that he could call me up, and I would say, sure, I'd like to go to a game. So back in 2004, Jim had tickets to the American League Divisional Series. He had seats on the Green Monster. Talk about the baseball kingdom. Remember the great comeback. First Cleveland, then the Yankees. I was invited to be there. There was only one problem. When the call came in, I let the call go into voicemail. And by the time I checked my messages, it was too late to go to the game. Oh, sure, I got to read about it in the Globe, see highlights on TV. But I didn't get to be there. That's what Jesus is talking about here, although it's something far more consequential, something that can truly transform our lives. And we know that we can miss these invitations to the kingdom. We can recognize after the fact, and Jesus doesn't want us to live with that regret. We have hang-ups around money. We need to confront them, because if we don't, we're going to lose. We need to ask ourselves why we have these hang-ups, and we need to talk about them in our families and with our friends and in our community. We need to do this so we can be free. So we can be free to enjoy the abundant life, the truly rich life that God offers to each of us and to all of us.